Most Christian schools today use the same books, teaching methods, and structure as America's failing anti-Christian public schools. We owe it to our fathers and descendants in the faith to offer a distinctively Lutheran education. Redeemer Classical School in Fort Wayne, Indiana, offers a time-tested education in the great books of the Western world and the Catechism and Confessions of the Lutheran Church. Visit fortwayneclassical.com to learn more about our curriculum, enroll your children, or sponsor the education of young Lutherans. That's fortwayneclassical.com.
Trump says you must be able to speak language English, qualified, and have a job skill. Jesus would not qualify to come in Trump's country, and he would not qualify to get in Jesus' kingdom.
Wherever you have polytheism, you have cultures, you have this fractured understanding of God where he's splintered up into all these different beings, you always have a lowering of ethical and moral standards as well.
I can come to the scriptures with humility, knowing that I can err, but I ought to have the confidence that the truth of God's word can be known there and that I can in fact know it.
Stay-at-home moms, antiquarian enthusiasts, some sensual Cali, loves, issues, etc. Can you see the fish?
Yes, I see the fish. It's right there.
There's no doubt that something needs to be done. Our educational system is lagging. It's flagging. It is falling behind, and it has been for decades. Now, they talk about low pay for teachers. We could always pay teachers more. That's a given. They talk about a system, a Department of Education that controls too much of what happens in the classroom, that kind of centralized idea of education. Sometimes we hear about school choice, and that's variously defined. Why is the left now, today, so adamant about defending the status quo in American public schools? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, school choice, and the left's intellectual and moral bankruptcy. Joy Pullman of The Federalist will be our guest for the first half hour. A little bit later, Pastor Peter Speckard begins a series with us on congregational membership. We're going to talk about two different kinds of membership. David Harsanyi of The Federalist will join us to talk about Democrats and a religious litmus test. We keep hearing them over and over again in confirmation hearings for various candidates for federal employ, but most lately for federal judges. We'll find out what was applied as a test and get to David's reaction. Then Pastor Chris Roseborough joins us for This Week in Pop American Christianity Today, taking control over the weather. There are charismatic leaders who say that not only they, but you also should be able to control that weather. That would be a nice thing to do. It would be a nice thing to do in an age of hurricanes and flooding and one tropical storm after another. Joining us on this Friday to talk about Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, school choice, and the left's intellectual and moral bankruptcy, Joy Pullman. She's a mother of four children, managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, and a recent column for The Federalist titled The Left is Still Freaking Out About Betsy DeVos Because School Choice is an Existential Threat. Joy, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
You say that the failure of U.S. public schools isn't just a failure of the schools themselves or the system, but of the left. Why?
Well, American public education has kind of been in the vanguard of being transformed into kind of the sort of system, the sort of governance and structure that is favored by the political left, starting with progressives all the way back at the end of the 1800s. Education, along with healthcare, in fact, are kind of the two sectors in the United States, which, you know, of course, has long been a kind of a place for free markets, free institutions, you know, private association, not coercion and central planning. But education has slowly been kind of transformed into kind of the vanguard of what the political left thinks is a good way to run things, run from the top down, run by unelected experts that are really not close to the people that they're supposed to be serving, and, you know, not the people who are the closest to the individuals who are at the core of the problem.
So in other words, really, the left has given us what we have today by way of the public school system.
Right. So, I mean, the way that public schools are kind of arranged is it's further along on the sorts of, and as well as healthcare. It's for, they're both of these kind of commanding heights of our economy. They're the two kind of areas of our economy that are growing the most right now, and they're also the ones that are most kind of government-controlled, government-run, and not just, again, at a local level, but also at really far layers and layers of bureaucracy and different entities that are typically unelected, you know, unaccountable to, you know, to voters, to taxpayers, and parents. You know, so again, you know, they're farther along in the sort of same program, you know, that again is what the left sees as kind of the ideal vision of creating society, which, you know, they tend to favor the collective over the individual, you know, unelected folks over elected folks, and, you know, government run things rather than private run things.
Now, why is the left so animated, and why do they have so much animus toward Betsy DeVos, the education secretary?
Well, so Betsy DeVos, her real big thing is school choice. So she believes fundamentally in the idea, and she's said this many times in many forms in many different ways, the idea that parents should be the ones who really have the deciding power over the kind, the style, the place, and so forth, all the important things about how their children are educated. And so this is existentially terrifying to the left, I think, for a couple of reasons, but one of them is what we were just talking about. It is the precise opposite of their idea of how things should be run. You know, she emphasizes the individual and individual's choices and responsibility first for himself, and then waves stemming out from there, you know, to family, to church, to community, and so on and so forth. And the left sees it kind of in the opposite direction, you know, kind of, where the government is kind of the central functioning unit of society, and all the rest of us are kind of, at its mercy or at its beck and call. You know, government is the, Barack Obama said, is the thing that we do together. So that's kind of the leftist view. So those are really two irreconcilable ways of running a society. You know, you can't have both collective and individual, sets of systems. They're directly competing. You have to have one or the other. And so that's one of the reasons. But I also think another one of the reasons is that because the leftist project has been functioning in schools for more than a century now, we are really already seeing the failure of, you know, of their ideas coming to fruit. American public education, we spend the most in the entire world typically, per pupil inflation adjusted money on our kids, and we get middle of the pack outcomes when it's, you know, all adjusted for student background, you know, comparing the same kids with the same kids. And that's been the truth for about 40 years now. And so the spending keeps going up and the outcomes keep flatlining or going slightly down. And not only that, we have had some really, really obvious major failures in the public education system come to light recently. So one I was talking about in the article is Detroit. You know, I mean, if any of your listeners have read anything about the public school system in Detroit, it's just appalling. It's just appalling. You know, public teachers unions have essentially looted the system. They have spent decades and decades of money in the past and to the future, to the point where literally the schools are so bankrupt. Children are going to school, you know, with water coming through the roof, with horrible, you know, bathrooms where they have to bring their own toilet paper. You know, things you would think of in a third world country. This is happening in the United States. And it's because, you know, the left's ideas ultimately don't work. Collectivism produces shortages, low quality, misery, and it sounds good, you know, all their mantras sound really good, but in practice, they do not work out. They hurt people. And so that, I think, is really destabilizing for them to finally come to have to face. And Betsy DeVos, you know, points this out by her existence, by her pointing to these facts. It is really embarrassing to the left, and they really don't have an answer, because the real answer is to repudiate the political philosophy that creates this misery.
I wonder why competition is seen as a dangerous thing in the current system.
Right. That was an interesting thing that I was thinking about as I was writing the article, because I'm responding to a number of pieces this week, just critical of Betsy DeVos and the idea of school choice in the New York Times and the Atlantic and on NPR's This American Life. In the This American Life radio show, they're quoting folks from a local school district in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And it was, and these are people who work with underserved children. You know, they obviously, you know, they do a hard job and they do their best. You know, so I really respect them for all they're trying to do. But when you listen to them talk, And they are also very charitable about Betsy DeVos, even though they disagree with her ideas about, you know, giving parents the majority control over what how their kids learn. But in that disagreement, you can kind of hear, you can hear coming out basically this idea that the school district owns the children, you know, that people are wrong to pursue their own, you know, what is best for their own family and their own children, because, you know, well, that might mean moving the child from a certain school, from a certain school district, because that is better for the child. And so it was, I mean, I was, you know, or people will talk about school funding like the school deserves the funding even though the child is not there. You know, they talk about school choice, complaining about the fact that when a child leaves the school, he takes, you know, the money for his education with him. And I'm sitting there thinking, just apply it to my industry, right? So I'm a writer, you know, I work in the news industry. Imagine if I sat there and said, how dare people read the Weekly Standard? How dare people, you know, read, competing sites and enjoy what they have to provide? You know, I wish those sites would be shut down by the government because it's not fair that I have to compete with them to provide something better in order, you know, to have people also come and read what I write. I mean, that would be kind of, it would be an obviously preposterous thing to say, but we don't kind of get the weirdness of it when we talk about public education because we're so used to talking about it in this way as if the institution owns the children rather than that the children have been given by God to the parents for the purpose of helping raise them up. So the kind of the priorities and the line of authority is all backwards.
Who is the culprit here? I mean, people will suggest, well, obviously the teachers' unions are the culprit because they have no interest in offering any kind of competition. How would you respond to that?
Well, I actually kind of, I'm hesitating here because I actually have some positive views about teachers' unions. There are some good effects that they have. But I think that's actually, I have seen them protect teachers from a terrible school district setting. So, for example, I've talked to teachers whose union went to bat for them when they were trying to teach, you know, better curriculum to their kids, but getting crushed because some outside school consultant came in and was telling them to get rid of classic poetry and classic literature and read, you know, novels based on actual junk science, you know, in their classes. And so, you know, but that, the root problem of that that the union kind of is a temporary fix to solve is the fact that the teacher has very little choice about where she gets to work inside that system. The teacher has very little choice about what conditions she's going to work under, what regulations, the amount of freedom that she has, you know, her classroom policies, all of those sorts of things that you would think are really important to a person's happiness in a job. And I know it is because my greatest happiness in my job is being able to do it, you know, have creativity and autonomy about how I get my work done, you know, in ways that are mutually, you know, agreeable with my bosses. So teachers can't even choose sometimes how they are going to give a student a grade because somebody out of the building at the district level, at the state level, at the federal level has made that decision for them. So inside that kind of a strangulation kind of system, I understand why teachers, you know, would feel that they need some protection, they need a buffer zone, somebody to negotiate on their behalf. But really the root problem, you know, that the union kind of sometimes can ameliorate is not, you know, it's the fact that parents don't have choice, teachers don't have choice. The school system is kind of this network of interlocking monopolies that really strangle the freedom of all the people involved with it, teachers as well as parents. So again, I mean, the economic evidence does really show, you know, that teachers' unions have a negative effect on public education. Their number one job is to make things more comfortable for teachers, and that's not always in the best interest of the kids. But at the same time, I see them as kind of a side effect of something that is a bigger and a more fundamental problem.
So you say that this would, that genuine school choice would in fact be a movement from what you call a zero-sum game to a win-win scenario. Explain that.
Right. So, I mean, in the current kind of setup for public education, what we have are a lot of zero-sum games. So, you know, for example, a child leaves a school district, the district loses the money for that child, the district, you know, loses that child to educate, so on and so forth. And but the child, you know, children in the school district are compelled to attend their local public school just by the fact of living in a certain neighborhood. So they're basically, the school system as it's set up is kind of a system of force, you know, where people have to do what the system says, or they have to really go through a lot of obstacles to get around or get out of it. You know, if you don't want your kid to go to your local public school, You have to pay higher a higher mortgage or higher rent to live in an area with better schools. You have to pay private school tuition on top of your taxes. You have to have a parent quit a job to homeschool your kid. You know, so that's kind of, you know, it creates all these, really, it sets up harder choices for all the people involved because it's based on forcing people to do things. But the alternative is allowing people to have to engage in a private association, free association, based on mutual interest. So you can have parents say, you know, we think that a Montessori-style education where the young children are given more freedom and they are taught to manage their time and to manage their own lessons, that is the style of education we think will be good for our children. And so, and then a teacher can come to that situation in a school and say, whoa, what a coincidence. We also think that's the best way to educate our children. And then the parents and the teachers can negotiate, you know, how the curriculum's going to look, how the school's going to be set up, so on and so forth. But it's a win-win. You have people who have mutual agreement. They both want to be where they are. They both have the same goals. And, you know, so it's kind of a really positive situation where they both come away with something they want, rather than teachers being forced to educate children that they don't have power, you know, over, you know, saying, this is how you will behave in my classroom. This is what I expect from parents and families. That just creates a much more positive situation where both people can say, here's what I want, and then agree, you know, to the outcome of how they're both going to get both of their needs met. I mean, that's really what the beauty of markets is. You know, rather than pushing people and requiring us all to negotiate, you know, through elections, through school board officials, through teachers and administrators, we can just go one-on-one with our own child's school and get what we want much more efficiently. And also, you know, the teacher, therefore, is also getting what she wants.
Joy Pullman is a mother of four children. She's managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, and a recent column for The Federalist titled The Left is Still Freaking Out About Betsy DeVos Because School Choice is an Existential Threat. You can read it at our Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Joy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Peter Speckert. He's written a book called Connected to Christ, Why Membership Matters. We're going to begin a series with him, talking about congregational membership and two kinds of membership.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans in their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Emily finally had to face the truth. Her church choir was a mess.
Katie Schuerman from her new audiobook, House of Living Stones.
Sure, they'd managed to turn out a few decent choral offerings for Sunday worship every now and then, but their confidence and morale were presently hanging lower than pants on a wrapper.
You can purchase and download an audio version of the novel House of Living Stones at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. House of Living Stones by Katie Schuerman.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. Issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.